Warning, the podcast you are about to listen to may have adult language and discuss adult themes not suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another bonus edition of the Far End of the Bench podcast, post-game of the Avalanche-Jets Game 4. And Nico, we are bringing a 2-3-1 series lead back to Winnipeg. Colorado Avalanche may have been the smartest team that nobody ever knew about going into the end of the season, understanding that, hey, if we end up in this situation, we end up getting a lot better of a matchup. I like my matchup a lot more against the Winnipeg Jets than the Vegas Golden Knights, which seems to be the case. And wow, this team, at FEOTB Pod, subscribe when you're tuning in. Hopefully you're tuning in with us live. We appreciate everybody doing so. Let's get all of that out of the way so we can just go and talk about this thing. But Nico, this one, after last night, it felt like we ourselves needed a bounce back. This is what this team was able to provide today. And it came in the form of a huge second period this time, but just overall general thoughts before we start looking at individual periods and performances, overall thoughts on game four of this series.
Well, Ball Arena is showing why it's the toughest place to play right now. It absolutely is. Boston Garden has lost a couple times already at home. Madison Square Garden has already had a couple losses at home. Ball Arena, maybe the Rangers and the Knicks may be the only two teams that have won every single game at the home so as far for two teams in the playoffs at one arena. But Nance showed up tonight, and it was an absolute rock crap. People went nuts about the whiteout. People went nuts about the whiteout. People must have forgot what it's like to play in Hockeytown, USA. Because Hockeytown, USA is not Detroit, Michigan. It's in Denver, Colorado. And like I said, look, it was a very, very good performance. And this team snatched home ice advantage away in game two, plain and simple. And then they come back home. They realize, yep, we play in front of the best fans in hockey. We play with our great home ice advantage that we have at 1 mile above sea level.
And then they come back,
and it's very, 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 and it's very, very difficult for anybody to beat us.
For the best fan.
No, I think it's one of those situations where everything has worked out in the favor, and things have gone better than you could have expected. You snatch home ice, you defend your arena, and now we get to turn around and look towards the future. But before we do so, let's open up things tonight once again. This is I feel like we're going to do this a lot just because of the way that things ended last year, but we're going to compare it to the Seattle series. You get the first goal of the game. You've gotten the first goal of the game, I believe, in every game of the series so far, even in that disastrous game one where we had the absolute meltdown between the pipes. You were able to kick things off and open up scoring. Arturi Lehkonen assisted by Casey Mittelstadt. Mittelstadt gets his fourth point. Lehkonen, I believe it's his second goal and fourth point of the playoffs as well. You start off hot, unfortunately, Winnipeg, just like they've done all series. And kudos to the Jets because they did not lie down. And I say kudos to Rick Bonus because he's now no longer afraid to make coaching decisions.
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean,
we have that conversation at third period, but I still think he's definitely afraid.
He's still not pulling the goalie, but he did make the move of goalies. We'll get to that at a certain point. It's been rough sledding for Hellebuck, and I need to find myself. We need to find a Winnipeg show to have on maybe after the series. I doubt anybody will want to come on, but actually, you know what, Canadian fans, I'm going to test your love of hockey. I want to see if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan. And you have a podcast and you would like to come on and explain what's going on in this series and why it looks like we're about to see back-to-back, five-game series for this Winnipeg Jets team. They were able to bounce back, though, and Nate Schmidt, assisted by Mason Appleton and Logan Stanley, ties to the game at 1-1. From there was never another point where the game was tied. That's the last goal that Winnipeg will score. Second period, Val Nichushkin once again is able to go through and he tests Hellebuck Hellebuck at this point, I know that you probably have the tally, Nico. How many games has he given up? How many goals has he given up in this short amount of games?
20 goals in four games.
20 goals in four games.
Yeah.
And we're getting a little New York Rangers love from the East Coast.
We all did. We'll be honest with you. Look, Hellebuck is the Vezina. He's more than likely the Vezina winner. I would highly doubt he does not win it. But it's a very unfortunate, but he just does not show up in the playoffs. Plain and simple. He falls asleep. And look, I the two goals that Valanciunas had, the first two, not the third one. The first one was a hell of a tip off the front, and we've shown that, and it's been shown that Val is great at the net and be able to get pucks deflected and make Hellebuck's life miserable. And then when you look at that second goal in the third period for Val, it was a rebound that Hellebuck just does not let up. Like he's a guy that is known for the regular season for not giving up second chances. The puck comes to him and it does not get deflected off very easily. It is caught and it is not deflected. That second goal went right into Val's sweet spot, and he just cranked that bitch at 1,000 miles per hour from 2 feet away. Like he absolutely cranked that shit. And I'll talk about Kale's goal in a second, because my God. But what Val's impact offensively is so massively underrated that we really, really missed it last year. And having that presence where, yeah, you don't need McKinnon and Rantanen or Kale, for instance, to get every single goal for you. Having a power workhorse that is your best forecheck guy, but also a guy that is feels like he's 7 feet tall with skates on, but he's like 6 foot
tall Russian bear.
6'5", 6'6", standing in front of Hellebuck, makes life a living hell. Not many teams have that. And Val's skating ability is unbelievable, but man, this goal from Cale Makar. It's an oh fuck Miller moment. Oh shit. Here we go again. Moment for Winnipeg. This kid is the best defenseman in hockey, and it's frankly not even close. He's the best skilled defenseman since Bobby fucking Orr. And I will stand on that. He may not be as good of a lockdown defender, but in reality, he probably is. Because he's so damn young that he will get to that point. But he is as lethal playmaking wise and being able to shut another team down as Bobby Orr was back in the day. Like, he is the second best player in the league statistically, very, very easily. McDavid is unreal, right? McDavid is unreal. Cale Makar is in that conversation. We talk about aliens in the world of basketball with the Wembanyamas and the Giannis of the world. Cale Makar is a fucking alien. He is a different breed of defenseman that we have not seen. And that move where he put two dudes literally on, I guess we could say shoes, because I like to say he put a guy on skates. He's already on skates. So put two dudes on shoes and had him just sliding out of the way. He's
earthbending. That's what he's – Avatar's big right now, Nico. We can say he earthbends going through, just shoo.
He nutmegged Lowry, and the word is just to literally do a deke that probably you and I could do, but how fast he does it, how fast he did it, moving it side to side, where it would seem and fast speed and normal speed looked like, oh, that wasn't much, but the guy got twisted so bad it was like the AI crossover that he's known for at the top of the key, where he just steps over the defender, just falls out of the screen, and literally just moves over. You're like, oh fuck. Like, it's a small little move that really is not that great, that not that like overly holy shit, but because it's Cale Makar. But the way he's able to move his feet and move the puck from side to side is like, this is a defenseman. This is not even a guy that's supposed to be scoring. And to go top shelf on Hellebuck too, to finish that off, there's only three guys on the planet that can do that. There's only three guys on the planet that can do that. Yeah, and two of them play for the Colorado Avalanche. Yeah. Only three guys on planet Earth can do what Cale Makar did in that play. And their names is Connor McDavid, Cale Makar, and Nathan McKinnon. We have two of them.
It's a little bit incredible. He goes from one end of the ice to the other, and it was a
non-icing call too. Like the referees didn't give the icing call, and they was like, okay, sure, you want to fuck around? Well, we'll just let Cale go 1,000 miles per hour full speed.
Let's see what happens. Let's go ahead and let Cale go from one end of the ice to the other. You know what it reminded me of? It's not the same series, and they're not down. Obviously, they have the lead at this point. But that goal McKinnon had 2 years ago against St. Louis, where he goes coast to coast in Ball Arena, deeks through a few different people. That was just, I mean, Lowry thought he was just holding him up. He's like, oh, I'm in your head. I'm in your head. And Cale's like, go to the bench and split two guys here. Everybody thinks, oh, he's going to pass it. There's no way he shoots. Well, I do that play in Chell. I was about to text you. I was like, Cale Makar is – I said I was driving in my truck, and I had it on the radio, and I hear McGahee go over, all hail Cale. I said it, and Boomer's the only – he's upstairs now, but Boomer was the only other one in the truck. I was like, Cale Makar is the fucking truth. He's the truth. Are you kidding me? That is – it's nasty. It's absolutely disgusting. And the dude, he's ours. He's ours, and he's our blue line. This is what the Colorado Avalanche have always been successful doing. They get a guy on the blue line that is transcendent of his generation, and we ended up getting one that's not only transcendent of this generation, but of pretty much all the generations that have played the game of hockey. How do we get this guy?
And you all know how we got it. It was because a good old Matty Duchene wanted out, and Ottawa decided to suck
Thank
ass.
You, Matt Duchene.
And we didn't. Hey, remember we didn't win the lottery. I remember that day specifically when we drafted him. We didn't win the lottery. I was like, fuck, we didn't win the lottery because it was the same draft as I believe it was Jack Hughes, and I was like, oh, we can get Jack Hughes to pair with McKinnon. That'd be perfect. We fall to four, and unbeknownst to the hockey world, they let a god. Go to the Avalanche, and Cale Makar is just a different animal, playing simple. And look, that's one thing, Ben. And look, his first playoff game, let's not forget, was first NHL experience at all, was coming off of a national championship where he was a Hobey Baker winner, and he played in a playoff game where he scored his first goal. From that moment on, everyone knew how good this kid was. Playing simple. And he stepped in right away and became the man. I still have a puck from the first game that he ever played. And I hold on to that because this kid is unfreaking believable. Unbelievable. And the fact that we have two of these guys on the same team that can go off with one another, just absolutely incredible. Like I said, look, we have two of the most skilled players in hockey on one roster. Yeah. And number eight and 29 will be up there with 19, 23, 77, 33, 21, all those numbers up there in 10 years. It absolutely will be. Those two will be Avalanche for lifers. And man, we spoiled. As long as I'm going to say, we're so freaking spoiled.
Very spoiled. I'm going through now because, like I said, I've learned new tricks. So I'm going to continue using these new tricks. We're able to see kind of the live reaction of the internet, which is obviously this is something that I'm going to enjoy looking at for the next few hours, but got to give a big shout out to Valeri Nichushkin. I believe he was either our star of the game or one of our underrated stars. It's such an incredible difference. And we said it all throughout the regular season because you could notice it in the regular season. We noticed it last year in the playoffs against the Kraken. When he is on the ice, this is a cup caliber team. When he is off the ice, they struggle to be anything more than a possible second tough third round matchup if they make it that far. Valeri Nichushkin, what he brings, him plus it's a couple different guys that are able to fill that void that you've missed with Landeskog not being there for the last however 2 years since they won the cup. But Valeri Nichushkin has taken his game to another level, seems way more focused. There was an air of something could go wrong last year, and things did go wrong. I've said it pretty much every time we talked about him. No Ukrainian women, no more. It's okay.
He has moved past all of that completely.
It's awesome. It's awesome to see.
And I know people were getting on his ass for going, and I remember seeing people, why the fuck is Val going to get help during the most important time of the year? And we were on a winning streak at that point. We were one of the hottest teams in hockey, and people were losing their minds, being like, this is terrible, but we can't have this. This is the second guy in the players program. What's going on? I said it perfectly right when it happened. It is the perfect timing for it. Because the regular season, getting the help you needed with him and Samardzija both doing the same exact thing, it helped them big time. Because right now, both those guys are skating out there with their heads perfectly on their heads, no background distractions, playing their best hockey right now of their careers, and it fit perfectly in. The Avs culture is what fits this team so perfectly because – I look at games like last night in Toronto where Marner was throwing his gloves and Nylander was saying, stop fucking crying, being a crybaby. And I look at the bench on this team bench where where Cogliano makes a diving stick save to block a power play goal from possibly going in, and the whole bench is there loving him up in that little corner of the box where he answers it. That's the difference between this team. And like I said, when you have a team that's confident in themselves, and you have a team that trusts one another, more specifically, trusts their goaltender with how good this motherfucker's been playing since after game one, since he got lit on fire by us and the hockey world. He has been incredible. You have that trust. It is very, very tough to beat you.
I think we'll talk about Georgie. We'll talk about the third period. Before we do so, just also going to mention one of the more scary things that happened in the game. The Meshnikov, former Colorado Avalanche, ends up taking a puck off of the face. Slap shot right to the dome. He was able to get up. He skated off himself, and it was a good job by both medical staffs to get him help as quickly as possible. They got him off the ice and back to the locker room. Excuse me. I'll look up real quickly as you talk about what you saw.
I've seen more blood on this ice at Ball Arena than I've ever seen in my life.
How shitty is it for – so the Jets, this is – you lose Nemetskov here. That's a terrible situation because that puck gets deflected. Nobody thought it was going high. But the Brendan Dillon, we talked about it after our post-game last show. That's the guy who his hand was bleeding because he got hit, clipped by a skate, but that was the blood that was left on the ice. How dumb is it? Like, you're trying to make a stand, you're trying to make a statement, and you lose yourself. Like, you're no longer able to play in this game. What are you doing?
This team's shooting itself on foot. After I said in game three, right, this team is folding like they did last year. They're folding at the helm. The fact that you're the best goalie in the regular season this year got chased quicker than the guy who let in 7 goals in game one and played obviously arguably his worst game of his career. Just goes to show, like, if you told me after game one, oh, the first goal to get pulled is going to be Hellebuck, and I'll be like, I'm sorry, I beg your pardon.
Hellebuck got pulled before Georgie.
I beg your pardon. And Georgie stands on his head with 1 goal tonight, only a net. And the 1 goal was a hell of a shot by Nate Schmidt in the first period. Like, that is a tough shot for anybody. It is a bar in goal that a handful of guys are going to make save on that. And it's once in every 10 tries. Basically, and besides that, I saw a bunch of tips and a lot of lanes where he was making hell of a save after hell of a slave. And look, all I said was, you need to give this kid give this guy some confidence. And you gave him the most amount of confidence you can, because like I said, a goalie with confidence, and that's not what Hellebuck has right now. Georgia has all the confidence in the world. Now he gets to see, now he gets to prove himself again, go on the road, and see if he can end this series and move on quicker than anybody else. Because obviously, it looks like the Western Conference is going to be a dog war between a lot of these games. It's going to be at least 5-6 game series between all of them, possibly 7. So getting out of the series is even more vital. I said the exact same thing with the notes. Getting out of the series is very vital, because those legs, that rest you get in your legs is going to translate into longer runs, into having fresher legs in the third period at mile above sea level. So getting game 5 and breaking those hearts of all those at the wideout down there would be very, very suiting.
I don't disagree with anything that you say. I was not able to find an update on Nemetskov's status. Hopefully we'll have an update. We'll probably be able to throw that in tomorrow after we thought we were going to get tomorrow off from these live games, but the Nuggets decided, nah, you guys can do 10 in a row. What's 10 days in a row for that? I did find Andrew Cogliano making a statement on Alexander Georgiev, and this is kind of what you were mentioning, so that I want to give everybody a chance to listen to it. I'll play it through. This is the confidence that we're talking about. People are showing in their goaltender, but this is why I think we're seeing the level of play being elevated from Georgiev, because now he's seeing these guys. It was dire straits in game one. It looked like they did not want to play for him. They did not want to block shots. They've been able to kind of turn themselves around. So here's Cogs talking about what Alexander Georgiev has meant for the last few games.
He's played strong. He looks good in there. He looks confident.
They've been able to kind of turn themselves around. So here's
last couple games.
Cogs,
you know, talking about the whole time you go far. So it seemed like, you know, the last two games he's done that.
What changed? Was it just getting the guys in front of him, or what was?
You know, I think defensively we need to play better. You know, just simple as that. You know, limit our chances. Limit the.
All right. You know, well, the home plate. I gave chances. It a shot. It was worth a try. Just know that Cogliano is making statements now. He's backing up Alexander Georgiev in the media, and he's not going to be the only one. Jared Bednar will come out and say all the right things. People do owe him, and I think that we could be maybe put into that category of people that owe him an apology, because he was able to bounce back. And yes, I did not want him in net in game two if Anadin was available. Yeah, we both said it on post-game show number one. That was not playoff worthy. That was not Stanley Cup worthy. That was not worthy of being in the net for the following game. So barring anything else happening, and unfortunately, that's not the way that things worked out. Things work out the way that they do for a reason. And I guess not – I won't say unfortunately. I'm glad that we were able to have to – it would be shitty to still have this goaltending conversation going into round two.
No, and have – and be able to be like, yep, that's our guy. That's the guy you're going to. That's the guy you trust is very, very important. Because like I said, having a conversation of like who's the guy in net, it doesn't just bother the coach when he gets asked about that 24/7. It bothers the team because you don't know what number between the pipes is going to be back there to communicate. It's a whole different communication system out there on the ice, especially defensemen, when you have a different guy out there. It's night and day. It's the same thing as a pitcher or as a catcher when you're catching for another pitcher. It's a whole different cadence. It's a whole different thing that you have to have because of who's the guy you're trusting. So confidence is all there. The confidence is all there, and there are zero doubts about this offense. That's the best part about this. Last year when we were struggling, it was the offense that was not keeping up to par. The offense is firing all cylinders. You're getting production from everybody, and I mean everybody. Middlestad getting on the assist sheet again. Lehkonen getting on the goal sheet again for the fourth straight game. Obviously, Val getting a hat trick tonight with his four goals, or at least now seven goals. I think he leads the NHL now in playoff goals. He just passed Hyman with that empty netter at the end of the game. You are getting production for everybody not named Nathan MacKinnon. That's scary. That is very, very scary because you know that switch and
Mikko Rantanen. Mikko Rantanen off the score sheet.
Both those guys are just taking time bombs, being ready. It's just a cannon ready to be fired, plain and simple. And they, like I said, not having production from them and dominating the way you are and winning three games by more than three goals each time is crazy. It's crazy to say that when MacKinnon and Rantanen are not putting the puck in the back of the net every single time. So that's a kudos to this depth, and it's kudos to McFarland and Sakic and how they built this team, because they obviously realized last year we can trust our goalie, we can trust our defense, we need the production offensively, and this group has been perfectly set up for that.
Talking about the third period, it was a defensive masterclass, and I think it all starts from the goaltending. So Georgiev has now – what we kind of talked about the other day and what we really struggled and harped on in that post game after game one was don't force things. Why force issues? You know that openings are going to be there, especially because your talent is such that these openings are going to happen. So we don't need to take risks. And you have a two-goal lead in the third period. Great. Every time that you catch the puck, you freeze it. You get a face-off. You don't give the opportunity for rebounds. You don't give the opportunity for trash. You don't give the opportunity for bodies in front of you. Alexander Georgiev decided everything from third period that gets in my glove, I'm holding on to it. We're going to have a face-off. Tonight, the Avalanche weren't terrible in the face-off dot, 50%, 50-50. So that's something that's big. As long as I think they can be 50%, maybe even like 45, that's huge for them because they'll be able to make the plays and get people out of their zone. But their forecheck, their back pressure on their forecheck, being able to just throw a guy like Casey Mittelstadt out there with Valeri Nichushkin and Arturi Lehkonen, that line literally as soon as it comes out on the ice is pressuring offensively on the Winnipeg side. So I feel like the defense that we saw in the third period, it's repeatable. I don't want to say that this is how the defense is going to look for the rest of the playoff series because they've looked absolutely incredible, and we've seen things change. There's ebbs and flows all the time. There's probably going to be another point where we have to score seven goals in the game. But the defense has played absolutely lights out. Three goals in the last two games. Yes, three goals in the last two games at home. And you now have a chance to close this series out.
Five goals in the last three games. And that's a 17-7 or 17-5 difference in three games after game one.
Like that, what did we talk about with the Nuggets last night? Like, get some rest. Give some extra rest, because next series is going to be hell.
And I love the way that it goes. And I love the creativeness of Bednar, obviously, with changing lines and everything. He did a move today that obviously is very, very shocking because of how well this guy's been playing. But Kirilenko was a healthy scratch today, if you guys did not notice. Nikolai Kovalenko was the stud Russian forward. Guy's first touch on the ice today. And like you said, he did not do anything outstanding, but he did not make dumb plays. And that's a great thing to have.
Him and Trennan are bulldogs out there. Him and Trennan bring an air of physicality. Like, they're just looking to fly around and hit people.
And those two, and having Kiranta and obviously having Drouin back eventually here in the playoffs, hopefully for next round, is massive because you're getting these fourth or fifth line guys the experience in the first round to see what is expected of them. Because we don't – well, Kovalenko and Kirilenko and are not probably going to play every game throughout the playoffs. But having them have them some experience so that when you – if you're called upon – because like you said, injuries happen in the playoffs. The team that is the healthiest and the best team wins the Stanley Cup at the end. No one's able to get through a whole entire playoff season without getting an injury. Having those guys get experience under the belt and play in big moments is going to elevate future down the road. And Bednar, like I said, Bednar plays these games inside games where he's playing obviously the game and he's trying to win in general game. But he looks at the long picture of things, be like, how can I implement these fourth or fifth lines to get some momentum for the next game? Is Casey Middlestep, should I put Casey Middlestep with Arturi Lehkonen as opposed to Lehkonen with the first line? It's because I know that Middlestep can set him up to get him on the score sheet every night. These are the things that Bednar does that bonus has completely just gone away from. I don't care. You could say what you want about him, like not saying not to pull the goalie because you can't keep the puck. If you are down by three goals and you do not pull the goalie with more than 5 minutes left and you wait until the 3 minute mark to pull your goalie, you are conceding the game. Straight up, you are conceding the game. You are saying, this is over. You pulling the goalie does nothing for you. It doesn't look in reality, it does not matter if you lose 7-1 or if it's 2-1. A loss is a loss in the playoffs. There's no goal differential, it does not matter. If you think you're so hot and bothered that you know what, you believe in your guys scoring three goals in 2 minutes with a man up, why do you not take that gamble? Plain and simple. Bonus is a hot seat because he lost four straight last year, and he's at risk of doing that again this year. And it shows that not only is Hellebuck crumbling, but Bonus is crumbling in the big moments. And this team of like I said, good players, not any real star players outside Hellebuck, is falling to the pressure of a much more talented team and a team that's ready to fire at all cylinders while Winnipeg is trying to catch up to that level of play.
We're going to get into our predictions and talk a little bit more about the game coming up on Tuesday. That's going to be presented by, once again, our store here at Variety Sports Network, bonfire.com/variety-sports-network. We have playoff shirts for the Avalanche. This is the backside of the shirt, the climb back up to the top of the mountains, always the hardest. On the front side, we got an Avalanche player skating up towards the top of the mountain. As close as we can get without being copyrighted, these are available. Really cheap price. Also have a ton of different stuff available from around the Variety Sports Network. So we're getting into now predictions, Nico, for this game coming up Tuesday. It'll be a little bit later of a night for the two of us with our post-game show, but I'm hoping that things go the way that we want them to. But I'm also really expecting the biggest punch that is possible from these Winnipeg Jets. So presented by our own merch store, what is your prediction for Game 5, starting with – who's in net for Winnipeg? Do they go with Bersois?
No, they will not. If they do, it's already it's a 5-2 game. Hellebuck is in net. I don't care how bad he has been. He was that good in the regular season, and you have to just ride the horse. If you lose this, like you lose a series without Hellebuck in net, what is that sending a message to your team? Plain and simple. He was the best goalie all season. It's different than Georgiev, right? Way different. Hellebuck is known as one of the best goalies in the world. Not going back to him would be idiotic, and it'd be lighting a match to your coaching resume for hoping that you can get another job when you get fired in 2 days after the game's over. It's Hellebuck and net, and I've been waiting on a Hellebuck game. I thought tonight was going to be it, and it was not a Hellebuck game. I think at home it's going to be different. I think it's going to be 2-1. It's going to be a much slower scoring game, And I would love to have the Avs win a lower scoring game, to be honest with you. Because at some point, you have to win an ugly game, and scoring five goals every game is not going to be sustainable. So I would love to see a 2-1 hockey game. Yeah, it's not the most entertaining thing in the world, but I want to see a gritty win that can help you when the series get closer, when you play more talented teams later down the road.
I would like it if that happened. The only reason why I'm not freaking out about that right now, I would like them to have it like an overtime game before. I feel like they've always had an overtime game early on in the playoffs when they've made long runs. The way that they've been able to shut down, like, you aren't backing your way. You're not getting a 3-goal lead at the start of the period and winning by a goal. You're getting that 3-goal lead at the start of the period, and then you're adding the empty netter and doing whatever else you need to. Like, you're playing the shutdown defense. I think you only gave up two legitimate power play calls. You knew that you were going to give up one because, like I said, the referees are always trying to even things, keep things as even as possible unless it's super obvious. And they even totally ignored a high stick on Nathan MacKinnon in the second period today. I told you, they're going to be super hesitant to make any calls against Winnipeg because of the discrepancy in the last game. But I would like to see a little bit more of a tightened up version of the game where the Avalanche have to figure out a way to get through the neutral zone. But I'm not going to be greedy. I'll take however we can get out of this first round. Let's take care of business. Let's get rested up, and hopefully Drouin is ready to come back. I really like, last shout out, Sammy G had a huge game, has had a huge presence since he came back at the start of these two games at Ball Arena. Huge shout out to the two crowds that came out to those home games, made sure that Winnipeg knew their barn might be loud, but ours is louder and ours is tougher to play against because we defended home ice. And that's not only kudos to the players, but that's kudos to the fans, the coaching staff, everybody at Ball Arena makes it one of the greatest atmospheres. We are going to end off. Well, I made a video for our last show. That'll be the ending of our show here today. I'm predicting, I'll say 4-2. It's going to be, I'll say that it's 3-2 going into the third. We're going to have to play solid defense. It'll be a tight game like we're both expecting, like we both want. I don't want overtime this early. It's too much for my heart. So I'm going to say we get that empty net goal really at close to the end. We'll win 4-2. We move on. And we're having a celebration after game two. Hopefully back-to-back celebrations the next two nights coming up. That's what Absolutely. We're possibly on tap for. What else do you got, Nico? What else do you got for the people?
I'll be at the Nugs again tomorrow, so I'm excited. And like I said, hopefully the next 2 days go very, very well is all I'm hopeful for. So, yeah, it's been a hell of a run. We're 6 down, 26 to go. I'm not even going to say the series because of how cursed those series numbers are, but we have two leads in two series that are not very, very fun to have. And it's important to put when you have a dead animal on the ground, limping for pain, limping for help, you put his misery out and you move on to the next round. So I'm going to say, I'm going to use a quote from one of my players, and he used this during the playoffs last year for the PLL for the Woods, and that's Westberg. And Westberg said, "We're in the business of any people's seasons," and I expect to do that tomorrow, and I expect to do that Tuesday.
There we go. Exciting news all around. Hopefully, we have a couple big celebrations coming up before we get into the Ball Arena atmosphere video, and before we send you off before tomorrow night's post game show following Game 5 between the Nuggets and Lakers. We will see you guys afterwards. Follow at FEOTB Pod. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Continue to rock with us. Appreciate everybody tuning in live. And if you catch the replays, we appreciate that as well. Be sure to like, comment, follow, subscribe, everything like that. For myself, Jimmy Pilato, my co-host, Nico Bryant, thank you guys for tuning in to the Far End of the Bench. We will see you next week.
Peace. Thank you.
If you don't stay down and you never quit, come on over here and sit on the far end of the bench.